From a studio high above the clouds of the Okanagan Valley, this is the Cannabis Podcast. Exploring the world of Canadian cannabis culture, one toke at a time. Now, here's your host and bud tender, Gary Johnston.
And I have taken care of the one toke, well, okay, maybe it was two or three, but I'm ready. And welcome back to another episode of the Cannabis Podcast. If this is your first time, I hope you're ready for a bunch of cannabis information for the next few minutes on what, in fact, may be one of the longest episodes of the Cannabis Podcast. We have a feature conversation with Tanner Stewart, who is the CEO of Stewart Farms in New Brunswick. This entrepreneur has some very strong opinions on many things about cannabis, and he's leading some great innovations at Stewart Farms. That is our feature conversation on this episode. We're going to start off with a couple of quick retail updates before we get into the conversation with Tanner. And so that we don't leave you disappointed, we're also going to throw in a cultivar corner. We're going to stop at Cultivar Corner for a taste of some rather sweet L.A. Kush cake. All of that and more on episode 63 of the Cannabis Podcast. And thanks to CannabisRetailer.ca for a couple of retail updates before we get into the conversation with Tanner. Medical registrations are increasing, apparently. This from January 15th from CannabisRetailer.ca, and Jackie Maynard is the author of this. As of September 2020, there are 420,235 Canadians registered as medical cannabis users. Of those, 377,024 purchased their medicine from federally licensed producers, and 43,211 are registered with Health Canada for personal and designated cultivation of medical cannabis. Now, the number may seem small, but it continues to grow quickly. Over the summer, the number of medical cannabis patient registrations grew by 24%, and patients registered to grow their own medical cannabis increased by 29% despite COVID-19-related delays from Health Canada. In fact, due to these delays, the cannabis regulations were amended in June to temporarily push the expiration date for existing registrations back 6 months. Now, the reported numbers can be somewhat deceptive. As COVID-19 hit, and the entirety of Canada, particularly governmental bodies, were scrambling to set up an effective work-from-home strategy for employees, Health Canada fell behind with registrations, and the reported numbers fell by 5%, from 320,340 in April to just over 300,000 in June, before jumping back to their current place. Now, when it comes to healthcare professionals writing prescriptions for patients to grow cannabis themselves, they generally authorize an incredibly high dose. While patients who purchase their cannabis from licensed producers are only authorized 2 to 3 grams per day, some healthcare professionals are authorizing an average of 36.2 grams per day for patients who grow their own. Well, since this amount is well above the daily average that published evidence and guidance suggest, Health Canada is concerned that some actors may be abusing the system. So that's the first retail update that I wanted to stop on, and the other one that I thought was I've seen evidence of. Sales of extracts in Canada increased 8.25% in September. There was 1,205,000 plus units purchased, spurring a 28% increase in production to meet demand. And I can attest to that. Vapes are very, very popular. And it's nice to see that our local producer Valens is involved in a whole lot of white labeling for vapes. Fabulous how that industry has taken off. That's a couple of quick updates from the retail sector. Now, let's get to my conversation with Tanner Stewart. After 2 years of legalization, cannabis consumers are fed up with wasteful packaging. A New Brunswick-based licensed producer, Stewart Farms, is challenging the cannabis industry's approach to packaging with the launch of its first cannabis products, all-natural THC CBD bath products, packaged in the cannabis industry's first truly biodegradable outer packaging, including the shrink wrap. And now here is my conversation with Tanner Stewart, CEO of Stewart Farms. And why don't you give me a sense of what Stewart Farms is all about and what first got you interested in cannabis?
Yeah, my interest in cannabis started, like many people, almost 2 decades ago in high school.
Of course,
so
yeah.
It was me and a bunch of friends, in the woods trying it for the first time. And so it's been kind of part of my journey for quite a long time.
Yeah, we share that in common.
Yeah, exactly. So I ended up in the putting Stewart Farms together. It was actually I got into business in general, about 16 years ago, I became an entrepreneur. I started a construction company out in Alberta. And through that journey, about 6 years ago, I ended up investing in a technology company called Nutraponics, which was focused on semi-closed loop agriculture. So the combination of land-based fish farming combined with vertical farming. So I essentially became a indoor vertical aquaponics farmer 6 years ago. We were doing tilapia and then, you know, Swiss chard, arugula, kale, basils, any leafy green basically you could think of. And then leading to 2018, I realized that, there's a huge gap in the cannabis industry and lack of focus on sustainability, whether it be from the farming perspective or from the consumer packaged goods perspective. And I also, had a much longer relationship with cannabis than I have had with leafy greens. So I decided to make the move over into cannabis in 2018. I purchased a building in New Brunswick, where we're currently located. And, because I grew up in New Brunswick, although I was in Alberta for the last 16 years. And I thought, New Brunswick has some of the cheapest electricity in Canada, some of the most affordable labor rates and cost of living as well. And I thought economically and on a federal from a federal perspective, that this would be one of the most competitive jurisdictions in Canada to run a cannabis company out of. So I really didn't leave behind the technology side of aquaponics and vertical farming, although we're not vertical farming with Stewart Farms right now, but we are, we do have our first phase of a small fish farm up and running and installed, and we're going to be plugging that into our irrigation system within the next couple months, and we're going to start feeding our plants that are currently being grown on living soil, but we're going to plug our fish system into our whole production system here very shortly. So
even pumping up the living soil concept.
Oh yeah, I mean I'm a huge. I actually produced a film about soil called The Need to Grow, and it's been out on rotating online release for the last couple of years. But Rosario Dawson narrates it. It became an even bigger deal recently because, Rosario Dawson was already a huge deal for us to begin with. But as a sci-fi geek and huge Star Wars fan, she is now Ahsoka Tano, which that was episode 5 of The Mandalorian. So she's a Jedi now. So when she originally narrated our film, she wasn't a Jedi, but now she's a Jedi.
That's very, very cool.
Yeah, but it's all about living soil. So I'm a huge living soil advocate. Yeah. And that goes hand in hand with aquaponics, right? If you're an aquaponics farmer, you believe in, living grow mediums, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. That makes total sense. Well, it sounds like what you're doing at Stewart Farms has some real innovation to the approach, unlike what we've seen in some of the industries. Give me a sense of what you guys are doing. I know that the biodegradable packaging is a big deal for you, Tanner. Mm-hmm. Give me a sense of what really appeals to you with what you're doing at Stewart Farms in that regard.
Yeah. So as you mentioned, we just launched our first products into the Canadian market in New Brunswick and also in Alberta. We chose bath bombs to put our first foot forward.
Yeah, I think that's a cool first entry.
Yeah, we're pretty excited about it, and pun intended, it happened completely organically. over the last year and a half. Originally, we had did these bath bombs as an interesting concept to teach people about terpenes within cannabis strains. So our first three bath bombs are Bubba Kush, Trainwreck, and Blue Dream. So those are all classic and quite popular cannabis strains. So the idea was, so we said, why don't we take those strains or a series of strains, and we will look at the terpene profile per strain, and we'll copy the terpene profile botanically with botanical terpenes, design a bath bomb, and we did soaps and teas as well, and then really just educate people about, hey, terpenes are actually essential oils, and terpenes and essential oils are in every plant in nature, and just draw that connection and start that conversation. And we did them as a giveaway, and we just gave them away a year and a half ago. And at this event, the World Cannabis Congress in St. John, I think it was June 2019, that conference occurred. It was the same conference that Martha Stewart was at. Bruce, when Bruce Linton announced the Martha Stewart partnership with Canopy, Martha Stewart was there. And I tried to tell her that I was her long lost son, but she didn't buy it. It was kind of an investment play, but it didn't work out.
Why wouldn't you try that, eh?
You know, I was like, Mom, it's me. You know,
good for you, Taylor.
Your security guard just brushed me away. So it was a great event. And we had tons of people we did a cannabis museum, basically, of all about the history of medical cannabis. And at the very end of it, people went through our venue and they got to collect their bath bombs and their teas and their soaps. They had a little shopping bag and they were just blown away. And then we had all kinds of people say, you know, hey, can I wholesale these? And none of this was infused, right? So these are all non-infused products, right?
Okay.
At this time. So we said, hey, well, why don't we start selling our non-infused products? So we started selling these products essentially with no cannabis in them online last December 2019. And people, you know, just they got great reviews. People love them. So then we eventually realized when we got our license in April 2020, this past year, we were like, my gosh, like these, nothing like this is on the market yet.
That's true.
We have to hurry up and get this on the market, right? So all of a sudden, this free giveaway that was meant to be an educational tool to help, kind of move the whole industry forward and educate about terpenes, is currently one of the most important things our company is doing. You know, it's the first thing that we're generating revenue off. So then when you get back to the packaging side of it, you know, that's who we are. Who we are as a company from the inside out is we're innovation based.
Right.
We're completely focused on long-term agriculture innovation, medical innovation, with a sustainability throughput or through line, you know, that's our core. It's all about how can we be more sustainable. So it was really important to us to do everything possible to try to not put more microplastics out into the world.
Is that right?
Yeah. So we've succeeded with our first product. Now I'm not sure we're going to be able to do it every time, but I can tell you this, whatever we can do to have next to no plastic in every single consumer packaged good we put on the market, that's what we're going to do.
And that is fabulous, Tanner, because as you well know, and you've kind of indicated as well, that is such a huge issue in the cannabis world right now. The amount of packaging that we are generating and consuming is astronomical compared to before we had legal cannabis in here. So good on you. I'm really pleased to hear that.
No, thank you. Thank you. No, it feels good. And you know, I like talking about it because, you know, hopefully it brings our peers and competitors online with it as well, right?
Absolutely. Set a new mark for people to go for. Yeah. And why stick with the norm when there's a better way to do it? So let's dive into a little bit more about these biodegradable products for packaging that you're talking about. And I'm looking at some of the notes that I got from Victoria, who's the one who set this interview up. Innovative cannabis application of, what is it called? Bioleffen? Is that how am I pronouncing that right?
Yeah. So it's basically the exterior of the package is a box, right? So that's the easiest way, you know, one of the easiest things to go with instead of plastic is you can use a box. And then the bath bomb itself is wrapped in what it is a plastic variation, but it looks like saran wrap, but it has a special chemical in it that ensures it's actually biodegradable, and it biodegrades not into microplastics, but into food for microorganisms. So that's why we can, you know, state that zero microplastics will be left behind.
And that was the fascinating aspect when I was looking at the notes for this. That was the part that truly amazed me, that you not only have gotten rid of the plastic, but you're literally contributing to the better environment as this goes through its disposal process. That's cool.
Yeah, and our price point on the product. Now, first off, our bath bombs in Alberta are retailing at about $17.99 maximum, and then here in New Brunswick, they're running about $16.99, and there's just a little bit of a difference in taxation and whatnot, right, between the two provinces, which drives a different MSRP in each province.
Yeah.
But the significance of that is we've got 100 milligrams, 50 milligrams of THC and 50 milligrams of CBD mm-hmm. in these bath bombs. The ingredients are a combination of natural and organic ingredients in the bath bomb. So we're equal to the quality of, or better than the best bath bombs that a company like Lush makes right now, right? So we're kind of like at the top of the non-infused bath bomb quality food chain. And we have a significant amount of cannabinoids in the unit, and we have a plastic-free package, and we're equal to or better than the illicit market pricing of these same products. So that's the real. I mean, there's some of our illicit market competitors that are selling, you know, 50 milligram cannabinoid products for $16. So they have half the cannabinoids in a plastic container with no regulation, and they're the same price. Yeah. so we're pretty proud about that.
And well, you should be. I mean, you hit the trifecta there, the triple play. Well done. That's very impressive. So a question that I have always been asked in relation to bath bombs, and I'm going to throw it at you. So you've already said that there's THC, there's 50 milligrams of THC, 50 milligrams of CBD in it. And the question I always get asked, and I'm going to throw it right at you, Tanner, how do they work and do you get high?
So the reason we put 50 milligrams of THC and 50 milligrams of CBD and not just pure CBD in the bath bomb is because we're really trying to ensure that we maximize the potential effect of the experience. And you know, what is proven and is known is CBD is anti-inflammatory. We have a ton of cannabinoid receptors, you know, a little more geared to CBD than THC on our skin. So CBD is very effective topically. Now, THC is antibacterial and antifungal, right? And is more often than CBD attributed to more acute pain relief. So what I can tell you is you definitely feel it. Now, one's definition of getting high will vary from person to person, but it honestly does. And you know, and as an example, the reports that we've been getting back from the customers that have been using these things are one lady said that she got in the bathtub, you know, she's been having knee pain for 3 to 4 weeks. And she got out of the tub with, you know, feeling quite relieved without that pain. We had another girl say, you know, she had the best sleep that she's had in months. Lots of reports of just like feeling very relaxed and tingly and a bit warm and heavy, you know, a bit kind of sedated. So I can't say that every person that interacts with these bath bombs is going to have the same experience, because that's just not how cannabis works.
Exactly. That is not how cannabis works, right?
It's not how any drug works. No. It's not how any drug works. It's not how Tylenol works. It's not how morphine works. And it's definitely not how cannabis works.
Yeah, right? No, very good point, Tanner.
But I can tell you one thing. People's skin feels great and soft. They smell great and they feel great. They're going to feel a lot better when they get out of that bath than when they got in. And the general experience will vary a bit.
And as you already indicated, everybody's general experience with cannabis is different. So you shouldn't expect it to be the same from person to person. That is very cool. I've often wondered what the effects are. I've never actually done a bath bomb with both THC and CBD. So, mm-hmm. Of course, I'm not a big bath bomb guy anyways. But you're starting to intrigue me. And I do know my wife would be interested in using the bath bomb. So what are your plans for the rest of the country? Right now you're in Alberta and New Brunswick. Any chance it's coming to BC anytime soon?
Oh, yeah. So hopefully within Q2. We'll be able to launch more or less in the rest of Canada, and that really is purely a manufacturing ramp up and a constraint, right? So it's like making sure that we ramp up at the proper speed to ensure that every time we launch in a market, that we don't have any gaps, right? So it's kind of nice that we started in two provinces. So right now, our number one mission is to make sure Alberta doesn't run out and make sure New Brunswick doesn't run out. And as soon as we can, within Q2, bring BC online, Ontario, Saskatchewan, Manitoba, the rest of the East Coast. I mean, our goal is to be across Canada with hopefully more than just bath bombs.
Yeah, absolutely.
By the end of 2021. So
you do have other plans? Bath bombs is the product that the universe decided you should put out first. yeah. And you do have some plans for others?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we have, I would say about 6 to 10 products outside of the bath bombs currently in development. I don't want to bring them up on this podcast,
don't want to let anybody know,
but I can tell you they're all being designed with the same intent and ethics through line that we're developing all our other products with.
So. Yeah. Well, and you've impressed me with the ethics of your company and the approach that you're taking on all these things. Very, very impressive. So you may have touched on this earlier when you talked a little bit about introducing some fish oil into this, but can you describe for me what regenerative, if I can say the word, and I haven't had enough to smoke here today. That's why I'm not able to speak properly. Regenerative cannabis farming. What's all that about, Tanner?
Yeah. So we're really trying to adopt the language of and the word regenerative.
See, it's tough for you to say too.
It is tough for me to say. So it's not the best marketing word.
Well, you'll find a different twist.
Yeah, but it is more specific and more meaningful than sustainable. Sustainability, which of course I still use that word continuously because I know what sustainability means to me, right? But it's so up for debate, whereas the word regenerative is more specific and a lot clearer than the word sustainable. For something to be regenerative, you have to be giving back, right? You have to be creating something or making something new again or fixing something, right? The word sustainable, well, what's your definition of sustainable, right? I'm only wasting this much or I'm only wasting that much. So we're really trying to shift our focus and metrics as a company to that core value. Well, it's not really shifting. It's just a better description, actually, of what our focus is anyways. So for us, what that means is understanding the impact of everything we do, assessing where all the waste is in our process, whether it's on the consumer packaged good manufacturing side or it's on the farming side, how much water are we wasting? Are we using disposable plastic? Anything where we can get rid of that, right? What are the impacts of moving away from this disposable thing over to this thing that we have to clean? Do we have to use chemicals to clean it, right? It's really just kind of first understanding where we're at. And then part two is understanding what we're doing to give back. So the perfect example I can give you from our cultivation is that we're composting all of our living soil and we're composting all of our root balls and all of our fan leaves and all of our biomass, right? We got a great big compost pile. We're going to continue to feed into that compost pile. So none of our organic outputs from our farming operations are getting mixed with, urea, which was happening in the earliest days of our industry. While everybody was using kitty litter to destroy their, it was right in the Health Canada.
Example. It's still bizarre.
Yeah. So some people are still doing that. And it's just really from a perspective I'm going to call that laziness. Actually, there's nothing more to call that than laziness because, we just changed our SOPs to compost, right? What Health Canada wants to understand that you're destroying the product and that you're tracking everything. I mean, really Health Canada's regulations are about ensuring you're not doing anything illicit, right?
That's the whole point.
Yeah, you're not selling, you know, you're not pretending you're destroying something and selling it out the back door. That's the whole purpose. So we just formatted our SOP that we, you know, have our waste basically kind of get mixed with soil. So you mix all your biomass with soil and water, and you let it rot for a day or 12 hours, and then you put it in the compost pile. End of story. And then we're going to use that compost pile to either grow more outdoor cannabis crops, or Tanner Stewart and the Stewart family will have the best vegetable garden in all of New Brunswick.
Absolutely. I could just imagine what the vegetables would come out of that. And then you could talk about infused vegetables after that.
Exactly.
See what the universe does with that idea.
That I can get back to lettuce again.
Yeah, there you go. So with the experience you've had in building Stewart Farms, Tanner, and all the effort you've done, and you've been looking, as we all have been, at the legal cannabis world for the last 2 years, What do you think are some of the things that they just didn't get right from the beginning that you'd like to see some changes made to?
Oh, okay. Do we have another hour?
That might be a bit too much of a question, but I'll take your answer anyways.
Such a load of questions. Okay. Well, I mean, first off, taxing medical cannabis, like, that is completely unethical. It needs to be eliminated immediately. As far as I'm aware, there is no tax on any other medication in Canada. So that, through action, is a statement that part of the legalization maneuver was and is to generate revenue. So as a government, you can't say that we are doing this to remove the illicit market on one hand, and on the other hand, take something that's classified as a medical tool and drug and tax it where you're not taxing big pharma, right? So that is probably one of the greatest, if not the greatest, sin in our industry. Action and words. So you got to look at the action, ignore the words. And, so it's a huge travesty. And then, you know, in the recreational side of our market, if I had to pick one, and I will just pick one major one, it's the advertising regulations and constraints, and of course taxes as well, right? You know, taxes are robust on the recreational side. You know, if I can take my kids into the liquor store and there's a pirate, Captain Morgan, who, by the way, that pirate has cost me a lot of nights, give me a lot of bad memories, right? But he looks like a kid's character.
Totally.
And there's these cartoons on these beer cans and so on and so forth. So if something, and I don't like comparing cannabis to alcohol, but in via advertising regulations,
it is
the most appropriate thing. Yeah. Yeah, you have to, because like alcohol is killing people every single day. Proven statistics. I think now you have to verify this, but I think on a global scale, some atrocious percentage, something like 40%. And again, we'll have to double check this number, but some atrocious percentage of murders globally are connected to alcohol. Period. Full stop. Right. And it's legal and we can advertise it and there's commercials about it. And there is no medical alcohol industry.
That's true too. I never thought of that before.
No, there's no medical alcohol industry. I mean, other than actually alcohol that we use on cuts, but I mean, you know, but
yeah.
It's not,
yeah. You yeah, know,
it's,
exactly.
a,
disin- you got
it's
it.
A disinfectant, right? You know, I use alcohol to disinfect the floors of my cannabis facility and I drink it on Friday night. And it's disgusting. And meanwhile, we have this miracle plant that we can't even, you know, and all my whole point here is give us the same leeway that alcohol has, or give alcohol the same restrictions we have.
Yeah, yeah, so absolutely. Go the other way if you can't make it better for the cannabis world.
Exactly. Yeah. Pick one or the other. Bring alcohol to us right away, like tomorrow, and then start treating alcohol like you treat cigarettes, because that's where it's at. And listen, I enjoy wine. I drink. I'm not Mr. Sobriety over here. And I've had lots of negative run-ins with alcohol since I was a teenager.
As many have.
Exactly. And I'm not blaming the world for that. but I can tell you that I engaged with cannabis 6 months, just pretty much 6 months before I started drinking.
Okay.
And when I put the two in parallel from, you know, being a young man to today, my best friendships and best experience and best memories usually involved cannabis and hanging out in the woods and hanging out in cars and hanging out at the skate park. And, you know, it was all good. We weren't getting in trouble. Yeah. We were watching movies. I mean, I remember one day, like, there was a snow day, as we have in New Brunswick, because you get 3 feet of snow in 12 hours. and I think me and my buddies, like, I mean, this is a bunch of teenage guys. We were at my house. We're smoking weed and we're watching Save It, Private Ryan. Yeah. You know, I shouldn't be telling people that, you know, you know, like, but that's the opposite of getting in trouble.
Totally.
Meanwhile, me and these same guys go out drinking and it is a disaster, like an absolute disaster. We're getting in trouble. We're lucky we're not getting arrested. Like, it's just, you know, it's right there.
It
what more
so
evidence
true.
Does the government need?
Right? Yeah. Well, they're just not paying attention to that evidence. So. No, that's a very good point. Well, I am glad I asked the question, because those were two incredibly relevant points that you raised between what we're facing now after legalization and where we should go. So let's take that one more step further, Tanner. What do you think they still need to do? Again, not looking for an hour's conversation in regards to it, but what do you think the next biggest thing that they could do to improve the industry today?
Well, eliminate taxes on medical cannabis. That would be massive.
Sure would be.
Yeah. You know, so it's, I know it's back to the other point, but that's one of the most important things they need to do immediately and right away. Legislate insurance companies to cover medical cannabis the same as they cover every other drug for every person in Canada. So both of those things are necessary. They need to happen. Long term, they actually will save insurance companies money and save the government money, because without knowing the exact numbers, I am quite certain that most of these pharmaceuticals are far more expensive, depending on the pharmaceutical, than medical cannabis. So forcing insurance companies to cover, they're all going that way anyways, because actually insurance companies are doing the math and establishing that medical cannabis is cheaper in a lot of cases than pharmaceuticals. So there's a financial movement there anyways, but we need to move quicker. And then also banking, same thing. The Canadian government needs to legislate these banks, and I'll call them out: RBC, Scotia Bank, Toronto Dominion Bank. Now, Toronto Dominion Bank is called Toronto Dominion, but they're not, which is, I think that's Canadian, and they are not funding cannabis companies, right? That is asinine. This is a legal industry. So we need, I'm not a criminal. Nobody in the legal side of this industry is a criminal, but if I literally have to avoid saying the word cannabis When I'm dealing with, like, I own a construction company still, right?
Sure.
And this is an exact thing that happened to me 2 weeks ago. I put in an email that my construction company was, they said, what type of work are you looking at doing in 2021? And I said, we're looking at, we're going to continue the traditional work we've been doing, but we're also looking at, you know, expanding into, you know, windmills, doing work on potentially solar farms, cannabis facilities, greenhouses, right? I put a big long list, right? Because I put the word cannabis facility in that email, I got grilled for like 30 minutes on a completely this is my construction company, it has nothing to do with this cannabis company, but it was the red flag because I put the word cannabis in, and it's all because they have dealings in the U.S., right?
I'm getting so tired of that answer, that it's related to people's dealings in the U.S.
Well, we're not the U.S.
Exactly.
So 100%. So, you know, we have a, It is the government's responsibility to allow us and the Canadian businesses to work and do our business freely without scrutiny in a legal industry. And they have done nothing to address this, you know, but kudos to Bank of Montreal, Alberta Treasury Branch, you know, and any of the other ones that I'm forgetting that are dealing with cannabis companies, right? So some banks have, you know, put their foot forward and come into the industry, right?
Yeah,
so.
And well, they should. And like I'm to the point you just raised, and not in relation to a cannabis company being able to use a bank, but I'm getting so tired of people not wanting to use their cards in our store because they travel to the U.S. and they're worried about that popping up when they get to the border. That's the other thing of I'm just tired about hearing about it. If I go to the U.S., who cares? It's Canada. We're living here. Cannabis is legal. Why does this matter?
Yeah, well, I mean, this is the job of the government,
yes,
right? This is why we elect. This is why we have elected officials. This is why we put them in office. We send them to Parliament to protect our rights as Canadian citizens, not to legalize an industry and let us flail out there in the wind as if we're still criminals, which is exactly what happened.
It sure is. Boy, does this show that stigma is still out there big and strong.
Yeah.
Yeah. Huge.
Yeah, totally.
Wow.
Totally.
You are doing some fascinating work, Tanner. I really appreciate you telling me a part of the story of what you're doing at Stewart Farms. And that kind of just naturally leads me into my hot seat questions. Are you ready?
Let's do it.
All right. So what's your favorite cultivar?
So right now I am loving the Royal Kush, Manobrot's Royal Kush.
Okay.
I grew it in my outdoor this year, and it's got beautiful myrcene terpene in it.
Nice.
It's great.
Excellent. And do you prefer joints or vape?
I absolutely prefer joints and will for the foreseeable future.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I sort of understand that too. I do also use a vaporizer as well, but I tend to roll joints just because it's easier. When you're on high, what's your favorite munchie, Tanner?
Oh, man. It's chips. I'm addicted to chips.
Okay.
They're
I've been there.
Yeah.
We all have been. Do you prefer edibles or flower?
Flour, hands down. And, flour and hash.
Okay. Oh, nice to throw in the hash. That's, mm-hmm. that's a nice
yep.
addition. So one of the other things that I ask every guest about, because I'm talking to people all across our country, and I am always fascinated with language across our country. So is there a particular term with you in New Brunswick that you use for a running joint?
For rolling a joint?
No, for running a running joint where it's burning down the side on you.
Oh, creep.
See,
yeah,
there you
creep.
Go. There's a new
yeah.
one. Wonderful.
Yeah. Oh, you never heard that one before?
No,
oh, it's
one,
creep.
That
yeah.
one I haven't heard before. The most common one is canoe. When
canoe.
I spoke to somebody out of Quebec, a white rabbit was another term that gets used. And
yeah.
now we have creep from
yeah.
New Brunswick.
Creep. Yeah. So we say, oh, it's creeping. My joint's creeping.
Okay,
oh, you
no,
creep
that,
there,
that totally
right?
makes sense. And then one other piece of language that I find changes across our country, and that's in how people refer to 3.5 grams, or what in BC we call an eighth. What do you call 3.5 grams in New Brunswick?
Three and a half grams? No, I'm just trying to think, actually. A quarter, half quarter? I think we call it a half quart.
Okay.
Does that sound ridiculous?
Absolutely.
I'm pretty sure that's what we call it.
but as I've determined, Tanner, that half quarter seems to start at the Ontario border. And,
yeah.
and from Ontario east, that does seem to be a common term. Because
mm-hmm.
we always get people coming into the store and ask for half a quarter. And I say, oh, so you're from Ontario, are you?
Yeah, and that's actually the first thing that popped to mind. And as I'm saying it to you, I'm like, do we say that?
I know.
I'm like, wait a minute.
The question I want to ask is, what did you stop your math that you didn't reduce fractions enough? Is that what that's about? Or
yeah.
Well, we will leave
no,
it there, sir.
It. Remember, everything went east to west. Okay, go ahead.
Exactly. And I just find it fascinating. Our country is so large and so diverse, and yet there is some commonality, and yet just little tweaks that tell you the differences in the different regions. Fascinating story, Tanner. Thank you for sharing it with me, and we'll leave it there.
All right. Well, thanks so much for having me.
All right. You have yourself
have
a great night.
Happy 2020.
Yeah,
2021.
THC, CBD, terpene profiles, what's in me? Oh, please explain to me. Cultivar Corner. Cultivar Corner. Oh, yeah. Cultivar Corner, please. always explain this stuff to me.
And on Cultivar Corner today, we are taking a look at a new LP and a new strain. Just came into the store in the last couple of weeks. And this is from a company out of Edmonton, Alberta, and they're known by the name Natural History. The parent company is Atlas Growers, but Natural History is the brand that they're using to sell this particular product. And some cool ideas they're bringing to the table. We've talked a lot about how having the terpene information on the packaging is where we need to get to, and we're getting closer and closer to that. They have taken a different approach, kind of a similar approach to what Leafly was doing. If you've checked out Leafly over the last couple of years, you'll notice that they display the terpenes for the strains or the cultivars that they talk about in a color format. Color and shapes is what they use to denote the particular terpenes. Well, Natural History is kind of taking that approach a little bit further. In fact, on the packaging, they have a color-coded array of what the terpenes are in that particular strain. Now, the issues with having a color-coded array to tell you the terpenes, there's no legend on the package, so you have no idea what colors those are. So you have to go to their website to figure out what those colors might actually be. And that's where you find out a whole bunch more information. So that's one piece of information, or one piece of data that I think needs to be changed. Because I have now worked with a couple of people over the last couple of years that are colorblind. And so they look at this and they all look the same to them. So they do get kudos for putting the terpenes on the package, but they could have done a bit better job by making it a bit more understandable what those terpenes actually are. But let's give them kudos for the terpenes. And here, so let's talk a little bit about this. I haven't even talked to you what the cultivar we're doing today is. From Natural History, this is LA Kush Cake. Sounds good, doesn't it? And here's a terpene profile. Well, first of all, let's start with the THC. So the THC on LA Kush Cake is 23.9% on this particular batch. And here's the terpene profile. 34% is trans-beta-caryophyllene, 15% of trans-neuronidol, 11% of beta-myrcene, 9% limonene, and 9% alpha-humanine. And there's a bunch of others as well. But those are the primary five terpenes in this particular strain of LA Kush Cake. And let's have a smell. Oh, yeah. When I first opened this jar, and similarly now, this is, I think, the second or third time I've opened it. Oh, that is a wonderfully delightful array. So some of that earthiness from the myrcene. The beta-caryophyllene, a little bit of peppery in there. Oh, and a little floral from the linalool. Just delightful. Let me give you what these strains actually are from, where this comes from, the story behind LA Kush Cake. And, of course, I will put the link at cannabispodcast.com, as usual, where you can find out a whole bunch, and I'm not going to read it all to you. You can read that for yourself. But LA Kush Cake was created by combining Seed Junkie's wedding cake with Kush Mints. That's the pairing on LA Kush Mints. I say, absolutely delightful aroma. Really love the nose on that one. I've got them ready. I've got the vaporizer ready. Let's get that up to power. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And there we go. And now I also have the joint ready. So I think it's time we have a taste of LA Kush Cakes. An indica hybrid, 23.9% THC. Oh. And interestingly enough, the taste comes through from the joint as well. Oh, I like that taste. A bit of the earthiness. Some of the floral from the linalool, a little pepper. Oh, that is just a delightful combination. All right, three hits off the joint. And there they are. I thought that was an appropriate point for a pregnant pause. And while I hung in that pregnant pause, suddenly, bam, my happy eyes are here. Oh, oh boy, I really like the taste of that one. Okay, I'm going to check the flavor profile over on the other side. Oh. Mm. I have to say, I'm pretty impressed with my initial feeling on this. While I wait for the vaporizer to warm up after that little power outage, I feel I eagerly want to pull in another toke. Hold it in there and express that. Oh, yeah. Really liking this LA Kush Cake. Okay, the vaporizer is ready. Let's see what it tastes like that way. Oh, my, my, my. Oh, full flavor. Oh, more of that earthiness. And that little oil just adds just a nice touch of floral scent to it and floral taste. I had hung on to this one for a little bit so that I could do the cultivar corner closer to the right time of the night for an indica. And I'm glad I did, because, first of all, really good feelings. Nice high. Nice euphoria that comes along with that. Okay, my happy eyes are here, but I'm also feeling a nice body relaxation. Feel like listening to some tunes. Of course, if I did that, then you wouldn't be able to hear me, but that may be for another time. And somebody who had also tried it mentioned the same thing, that it's really good for watching movies and listening to some tunes. So that would be an excellent activity to take part in. And let me give you a little bit more detail on this LA Kush Cake. With its high THC content, this indica-dominant LA Kush Cake was named Best Personal Flower at the 2019 Emerald Cup Awards. And as they say on the Natural History website, while awards are great, it's the cake-like terpene profile that keeps this standout cultivar in our hand-picked collection of genetics. And of course, they also score multiple points because they call it a cultivar. Thank you, the folks at Natural History. So, LA Kush Cake, I think I'm going to be coming back for more. Well, I think you'd have to agree that was a rather full episode of the Cannabis Podcast. And let me finish with a quote out of the Cannabis, the Canadian Weed Reader by E. Reed Ross. This is number 136. And I know you're not traveling right now, but let's just imagine that you actually could travel. And if you did travel to Dubai, you should take a break from your favorite pastime until your visit is concluded. Just ask Keith Brown, a British traveler who was arrested and sentenced to 4 years in prison after airport customs officials discovered a speck of weed smaller than a grain of sugar stuck to the underside of his shoe. So there's your advice if you're ever traveling to Dubai. Give up the weed when you're on your travels. And that wraps it up for this episode. If you ever have any comments about anything you hear or suggestions you have for future topics or people perhaps who should be interviewed, please send them along to info@cannabispodcast.com. That wraps it up for episode 63 of the Cannabis Podcast.
From the cannabis-infused studio, high above the Okanagan Valley, this was the Cannabis Podcast.
Thanks for listening to today's show. To check out more great cannabis podcasts, go to podconnects.com. Here's a preview of one of our other shows.
Hey there, my name is Leah Babrudi, and I'm the founder and host of Canna Chicks Podcast, where I discuss cannabis, psychedelics, and other natural medicines. I not only interview people who use them as treatment for different conditions, but also the entrepreneurs who share their knowledge on how they built their businesses. If this sounds interesting to you, give my show a listen. I'm sure you'll learn something that'll surprise you.